Going Linux, Episode 103, Computer America, Number 26. I'm Larry Bushy, the host of Going Linux.
And I'm your co-host, Tom. Going Linux is an internet audio program, a podcast, for computer users who just want to use Linux to get things done.
Whether you are new to Linux, moving from Windows, or just thinking about going Linux, this audio program will provide you with practical, day-to-day advice on how to use your Linux computer. Our goal is to help make the Linux experience easy for you.
Each month, we publish three episodes. We begin the month with a listener feedback episode. In our feedback episodes, we read listener email, play listener-generated audio, and answer listener questions.
On the third Tuesday of each month, I appear live on the Computer America radio show. We post those episodes, minus the commercials, as Going Linux episodes.
Our user experience episodes appear near the end of each month. In them, we normally take 2 months to explore a topic related to Linux. During the first month, we introduce the topic for new Linux users and recent converts.
During month two, we discuss the same topic from a more advanced perspective for computer users building their confidence and competence with Linux. This is my 26th appearance on the Computer America radio show from May 18th, 2010.
It's America's longest-running national radio talk show on computers, Computer America, hosted by national columnist Craig Crossman. Look for Craig's weekly column in your favorite newspaper. This show is being beamed nationwide by the Business Talk Radio Network, the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network, and on the internet at ComputerAmerica.com. Keep it here for technology news, computer products, guest interviews, and your phone calls. You're listening to Computer America.
Hello and welcome into the Computer America show. It's the nation's longest running nationally syndicated radio talk show on computers. It's Tuesday, the 18th of May, 2010, and I'm your host, Craig Crossman.
I'm your co-host, Carrie Holzman.
Hey.
Welcome.
Hey, welcome everybody, and this is the Computer America show. Just getting things organized here, in our chat room. Our chat room is up and running, and our guest for the evening has just is trying to enter into it. He's having some difficulty, so we'll figure all that out. But I think anything else is you want to mention before we get on to tonight's show?
No, I think we're good to go.
Okay, well, guess what? I just had it, and now I need to call this up, too. We just had let me just get to this point where I need to get to, and then we'll get to the introductions here. Here he is. Okay. All right. The Linux operating system, of course, continues to be more and more popular, especially in the wake of Microsoft's, Windows Vista. Linux, is it right for you? It's an important operating system. So we have decided here on Computer America, every third Tuesday of the month, we devote the entire show to the subject of Linux in order to answer questions is Linux right for you, and should you upgrade or change. If you have a Linux question, tonight's the night for you to give us a call. Joining us is our Linux expert, Larry Bushy. Larry is the creator and host of the Going Linux podcast. Hey, Larry, welcome into Computer America. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you guys this evening?
We're doing fine. I see you're having some trouble getting into the chat room, right?
Yeah, I'm not sure what's going on, but I'll keep trying, and we'll get there.
Okay, well, if it doesn't work on Linux, we can maybe you want to try Windows. Sorry.
That was not nice.
I'm just kidding.
And we know the chat room works just fine under Linux.
Yes, it does, yeah. Now, your phone sounds a little muffled. Are you using a cordless phone? What are you using?
I'm using you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you.
Oh, okay, all right. I'm using a
headset.
Headset.
Yeah, we got to get you off the headset. Maybe during the break or something.
That's too bad.
It's muffled. It's muffled. So I know you want to be able to type with both hands, but you know sometimes what can we say? We want to keep your audio quality good. But yeah, we're going to be talking about Linux, and what we always ask Larry to do is sort of give us a topic of what we're going to be talking about, or an underlying topic for Linux. And the topic that we're going to be talking about is Linux OS 10. Now, what do you mean? Because OS 10, you think OS 10, you think Macintosh, but that's the X, which is the Roman numeral here. What are we talking OS hyphen 10 here?
Well, that's a little play on words, and it's meant very much to be reminiscent of Mac OS 10. And I didn't put the X there because that would make it too much like it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so the topic is Linux, and there is a new release of the Ubuntu Linux operating system that has just come out this month. Mm. And I entitled the topic of this month Linux OS 10 because Ubuntu 10.04, which is the release of Ubuntu, is very much like Mac OS X in a lot of different ways. And I thought it would be interesting to compare the two.
compare Mac OS X to Linux. Now, that's interesting because I guess the underpinnings of OS X on the Macintosh is the Unix operating system. And of course, so Linux and shares that heritage, if you will, as well. So there might be some interesting correlations between the two operating systems because they do their underpinnings, their heritage both go back to the Unix operating system. Now, of course, I guess anybody who's looked at Unix. And anyone looks at Mac OS X will tell you that they are so appearance-wise, they are so far removed. You wouldn't know that they were related somehow. It's like going back to your great 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 grandfather or something.
Well, that's very true. And if you're trying to compare Unix with Mac, the Mac operating system OS X, you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
But if you were to take a look at the latest release of Ubuntu Linux, you would see a lot in common with the Macintosh operating system. And, for example,
yes,
it is more and more, every release, becoming designed to be easy to use. And easy to use from a desktop perspective. We've talked about the fact that many, if not most, of the computers that run the Internet are running Linux. And those are, of course, servers. I'm talking about the desktop operating system that the average user would use. And Canonical, the company behind Ubuntu, and many of the other distributions as well, have spent a lot of time and effort making Linux more and more easy to use, user-friendly, and having the features that people want on their desktop operating system. And they've been doing that for a number of years and have been very, very successful. And I think it's come to something that in the Ubuntu 10.04 is kind of the pinnacle at this point of what, at least in my opinion, the pinnacle of what Linux can be. And so they've taken a lot of pains to make it as easy to use as the Mac. In many ways.
Really? Well, of course, one of the things that OS X brought, if there was one thing that OS X brought to the Macintosh platform, you had to pin it down, was, if you could summarize it in one word, it's stability. Because OS 9 and OS 8 and OS 7 and the earlier iterations of the Mac operating system, which were basically patches upon patches of redoing of the foundation, which was weak in the first place, were system bombs and crashes, and you had to reboot your system. After a while, you know, you used it for a bit, you need to turn over, just reboot it, so everything would kind of clean out, and they had all these little inits and patches that would go. all that went away, and with OS X, basically I can just let my computer run, and rarely ever do I have to reboot it for anything. If an application goes down, it doesn't take down the entire operating system. It just, the application goes bad, and you just relaunch it. Before that, an application went bad, it took down the operating system, you had to restart the whole system.
Right. And Linux in general has been designed that way for quite a while and is very, very stable. In fact, many of the servers that, as I said, run the Internet and run many corporate networks are left running for a long time without any rebooting. And one of the things that allows you to do that on Linux is the fact that when you receive software updates and security updates, you do not need to reboot your computer in between. And that goes for both the servers and the desktop operating system with Linux. And the only real time that you need to reboot your system with Linux is when you receive an update to the kernel, which is the basic part, the most elemental part of the Linux operating system, the kernel. So, and even at that, you can continue to run after receiving a new kernel on the old kernel until you do reboot. So there's, if you have no need to use the features of the new kernel, then you can continue to even run your existing Linux computer on the older kernel until you have the opportunity to or have the need to reboot your system. Really? And, of course, when we're talking about servers, uptime is critical, and that's one of the reasons why it's designed that way and why Linux is very attractive for server operating systems. But desktop users as well gain that advantage in using Linux.
Right. I guess when you're running a server, stability is the name of the game. There's no question about it. I mean, you need reliability is what you really need.
Mm-hmm.
Because in so many cases it's unattended operation. There's nobody there.
Exactly.
The computer's on a rack somewhere in a data room somewhere, and there's nobody. So it's not like we're sitting in front of the computer all the time. So you need to have that stability and reliability. And I guess you said that's one of the reasons that Linux is such a popular operating system in the world of servers and on the internet. Hey, music means we're going to take a break, and also means hopefully you can change your phone out. We'll be right back. This is the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network and the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network. It's all Linux tonight, both hours. The third Tuesday of every month, we here at Computer America dedicate the show to the topic of Linux. We'll continue on with Larry Bushy, who's the creator and host of the Going Linux podcast, right after these commercial messages. Stay with us. Twenty-four minutes after the hour here on the Computer America Show. If you want to get in on the action, you certainly can. The easiest way to do it is the telephone. Pick it up. Call us toll-free, 866-606-TALK. That's 866-606-8255. That number will get you on and get you through. If you want to email us, you certainly can. We have a special email inbox set up when we're live and on the air. Because you might be a little radio shy, you don't want to go on the phone and talk to us with millions of people listening, but that's okay. We understand this. It's live, L-I-V-E, at ComputerAmerica.com. Or you can go into our chat room, the add-on chat room, and where our guest for both hours is desperately trying to log into. It's head over to the homepage at ComputerAmerica.com. On the left-hand side there, it says chat with us. It asks for a username. That's the name you'll be known by when you go in there. Click the login button beneath, and your Java-enabled browser be on a Windows machine, Macintosh, hopefully Linux, and Windows Vista 7, Snow Leopard on a Mac. It all should work. We'll move you into the Computer America chat room. Our guest for both hours is Larry Bushy. Larry, are you there with us now?
I am here. Is my destiny clearer now?
A lot more,
okay.
Yes.
Much better.
You need to burn that headset, whatever it is.
Yeah. I'm sure that the fumes are toxic.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. It was awful. Yeah, yeah, exactly. So much better now. And Larry Bush, again, the creator and host of the Going Linux podcast. And right now for this, the topic, we're going to get to some emails a little later on, and probably in the second hour. But right now we're talking about Linux and its comparison to Macintosh OS X. A surprising move. I didn't know that Larry was going to do this, but certainly there evidently are a lot of parallels between the two operating systems because both of them have their heritage based on the Unix platform. So
that's right.
So continue on.
Right. Well, we were talking about stability and we were talking about reliability, and one of the other things that makes the Ubuntu operating system, the latest release of Ubuntu, very much like Linux, excuse me, very much like the Mac, is the fact that they have introduced an online music store and an integrated music player. Think iTunes.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
But it's not iTunes.
So.
Okay.
Well, I wouldn't say that it is better than iTunes at this point. However, it does give Linux users an alternative to iTunes. It is something that the Canonical folks, the folks at Ubuntu, are calling the Ubuntu One Music Store. And it is integrated with the Ubuntu operating system in that the music player that comes with Ubuntu, which is Rhythmbox, that's the Linux program that is capable of playing music and storing your playlists and managing your library of music and podcasts and various other things. The Ubuntu Music Store is something that allows you to download and purchase and manage that music right from within the Ubuntu operating system. Now, this is actually part of Ubuntu One, which is a file sharing. I'm almost tempted to say, if you're familiar with Dropbox, the service that allows you 2 gigabytes of free online cloud-based storage. And,
oh, is that like Dropio? 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 Is it
yeah.
similar to that?
Yeah, similar okay. sort of thing, yeah. Dropio okay. and mm-hmm. Dropbox and there are Vox.1. There are several out there.
Okay.
And Ubuntu has its own that's called Ubuntu One. And it's integrated in with the Ubuntu operating system. And it's also something that they are developing. I'm not sure that they've released it, but they're developing an Ubuntu One application for Windows as well, so that you can share your files and any other information that you want between your Linux computer and your Windows computer, or share it with your Windows friends if you wish. And once that's in place, the Ubuntu One Music Store will integrate with that cloud-based storage so that automatically all of your music will be stored in that cloud-based repository so that you can share it across multiple computers and play your music across multiple computers as well. So download it once, it's shared automatically, and it becomes available just about anywhere.
Okay. So I just out of curiosity, I don't mean to put you on the spot here, but Linux is an important operating system. It's so well recognized. Why do you think Apple hasn't come out with an iTunes version for Linux? Any thoughts on that?
I don't know. I really don't know. You would think, with both being Unix-based, that it would be relatively easy to do that, but I don't know why. You know, I think perhaps because Microsoft with Windows has the bulk of the desktop operating system market, the folks at Apple may feel that they had to do something in order to capture some of those users into their iTunes store. But Linux is only fractionally larger in terms of number of computers out there, and certainly smaller in terms of visibility than Mac. And so perhaps Apple is feeling that the Linux marketplace isn't worth going after. That's all suspicion on my part, but sounds reasonable.
All right, there you go. All right, well, you know, It makes you wonder, because really it is so incredibly popular. You think they would do something like that. All right. This is the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network and the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network. 866-606-TALK, the toll-free number. Live at ComputerAmerica.com or the chat room at ComputerAmerica.com. It's all Linux tonight at Computer America. Stay with us. Twenty-four minutes after the hour here on the Computer America Show, 866-606-TALK, the toll-free number, live at ComputerAmerica.com with the chat room at ComputerAmerica.com. Our guest this hour and next is Larry Bushy. He's the creator and host of the Going Linux podcast, desperately trying to get into the Computer America chat room, and still can't do it, but we'll figure it out. And we are, of course, talking about Linux, and more Linux. It's all Linux tonight here. And right now we're kind of comparing Linux to Mac OS X. And his contention is that the latest Ubuntu, which is a distribution of Linux, is more like Mac OS X than ever before. And that's a good thing, right, Larry?
I think it is. Yeah. Wouldn't you think it is?
Absolutely. No, I really do. Now, I have not been privy to see what the latest Ubuntu desktop screen looks like, but is it close to the Mac? I mean, are there ways that you can make it? I understand that they're like skins you can make it, so make it very even more Mac-like, you know, make the little the red, yellow, and green button, little click buttons.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, so
sure there are. And, in fact, one of the things you could do is if you go to the Ubuntu website. We'll have a link to the website on the show notes, in the show notes. Okay. And if you just go to ubuntulinux.org, www.ubuntulinux.org, and a little ways down the page you'll see a link about Ubuntu features, the latest features in 10.04. And once you get to that page, you will see some samples of some screenshots right there. And you'll notice that the background, they've taken a note from Mac and even stolen a little bit of that eggplant-colored background that you see on some of the Mac wallpaper. And you'll see that unlike every other version of Linux out there that has a lot in common with Windows, in terms of the way the actual Windows look and the way they behave, the Ubuntu 10.04 Windows look more like Mac Windows because, if for no other reason, they have the buttons for maximize, minimize, and close on the left-hand side.
Yeah, they do. I'm looking at it right now. That is very, very cool. It looks a lot like Mac. Scary how much it does look like it. Hey, we're going to break just for 60 seconds. We'll continue on. It's all Linux tonight here on Computer America. 60 seconds. We'll be right back.
It's 40 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the Computer America Show live on the Business and Lifestyle Talk Radio Networks. It's rebroadcast on radio stations across the country and on computers around the world at ComputerAmerica.com. Our guest for both hours tonight, Larry Bushy. He's the creator and host of the Going Linux podcast. The subject for both hours tonight is the Linux operating system. I am a bit of a fan of the network-attached storage servers. I had very close to having 1 year of uptime for one of my clients. That means no restarts, no reboots,
wow,
no power-offs, no power-ons. The last count, I think, was at 310 days. I was so close, and then something went wrong. Not necessarily the fault of the server. Some other work was being done in the office. And, well, long story short, we ended up actually replacing the unit. It kind of woke us up to the fact that because the device has the Linux firmware built right onto it, if the device itself fails, we have no way of getting the data back. So we should have ordered two of them, one to keep as a spare in the office in case the unit itself dies. We could just swap the drives out and get it back up and running. So we corrected that mistake. We went from a US Robotics 8700, which they don't support or make anymore, to two Seagate Black Armor devices that are smaller, faster, and two of them cost the same as what this one unit cost from US Robotics a couple of years ago. So they got their money's worth out of it. And I feel better now knowing we have a spare unit. If the unit itself fails, we can just pull the drives out, stick it into another unit, and plug and play, be right back up and running. So I really like that.
Did you say it was Did you say Seagate? They put a Seagate in? Unit? Did you say it was a Seagate unit?
Yeah, Seagate makes a network-attached storage device called Black Armor, and the firmware on it is a Linux-based firmware, and it enables you to put 4 hard drives into it. Actually, the units come with hard drives already in them, and they're very reasonably priced.
Now, the reason I ask is because to let you know, Seagate's going to be on the show this Thursday, so that's kind of interesting. Cool. All right, go ahead.
So the boxes themselves are about, you know, 2 shoe boxes tall. They're very small. There's no keyboard, no mouse, no monitor to plug into. I could build my own RAID box and use something like FreeNAS, but then I still have this full-size tower. I've got to worry about cooling the hard drives. And this box will email me, and it's got a nice interface, very nice clean interface without all putting it all together myself. And quite frankly, just to buy a RAID card is about $120, where I could buy this whole box that's going to be smaller, quieter, and designed for this purpose with hard drives for around $550, something like that at Newegg.
Wow.
So, and then you can get it with 4 1-terabyte hard drives for like another $200 more. So I think it's a really good value, and it really offers my clients some reliable uptime. I've seen clients that have servers where I don't think they really need servers. They're not using any user administration access rights or anything like that. And these Windows servers require constant updates. And Lord knows, since I don't do servers, I've got a new client. I have no idea what condition his servers are in. So if I can replace them with network-attached storage boxes, that's the first thing I want to do. I love the redundancy of the drives. I love the clean interface. And I love the robustness and the reliability of them. And the big, big push is the lack of updates. So I go into a client's office, and on the workstations, I've got to update Adobe. I've got to update Java. I've got to update Flash. I've got to do this every month.
Mm-hmm.
I've got to go to Windows Update. I've got to get those updates. I've got to make sure the antivirus is current and working. I've got to delete the temp files and do the regular maintenance. And when you multiply that times, you know, a dozen computers, I'm going to be there a while. And this is regular Windows maintenance. But one thing I don't have to maintain is that network-attached storage drive. I just love that. And it was funny you're talking about this new version of Ubuntu, and it just goes to show you there's a TV shows are getting smarter, and there's a show on called The Big Bang Theory. I just love the show. It's hilarious, and last night they had this episode on, and actually it was actually supposed to take place in the past, which was kind of funny. When they went back in time a little bit when they were younger, and he opens up his laptop, and he's just sort of he's just satisfied with his whatever he's looking at on the screen, and he goes, "Oh, Ubuntu, you're my favorite version of Linux," or something like that. And I just wonder how much of the TV audience actually understood what he said. But at least what he said was accurate, and it was something I could truly see a real geek saying, you know. And I'm at a bit of a loss on tonight's topic because I don't know the comparison between Mac or Linux. I don't use either one. So, Larry, I guess I just have to put it back to you to explain where the similarities are, where the differences are. And just before I let you go, continue on that, Larry, would you build your own network-attached storage drive, or would you rather just buy one that's already built and ready to go?
Well, you know, I have a network-attached storage drive that I purchased myself, and I think that's the way I would go, simply because...
What brand and model did you get?
Oh boy, it's quite a while ago. It's relatively small. It's only relatively small by today's standards. It's only 250 gig, and it is. I don't even remember.
Is it a single drive? Does it have one drive, two drives?
Looking at the size of it, it could be one drive or two drives in that case. But I would suspect that it's two drives just looking at it, and I do know from the specs on it when I purchased it that it is running Linux, which is not necessarily why I purchased it. I wanted a network-attached storage and didn't have a spare computer that was, I felt, fast enough to run network-attached storage, and certainly you don't need a really, really fast computer to do that, but you do need the ability to have some fairly large hard drives in there, and I have to say the only power-based computer that I have is sitting beside me, and it's so old that it isn't running.
Well, see, for me, these network-attached these network-attached storage drives, in my opinion, really have to have four drives. They've really got to be RAID 5. Otherwise, what's the point? You might as well just plug a USB drive in, as far as I'm concerned, and share it on the network. But the
Well, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right.
That redundancy is great, but you still run into the problem where if the device itself fails, whether a power supply goes out or a chip on the board or a network port goes out, although on the Seagates they've got two network ports, which is nice. But in, if the network port goes out, here's your data. It's perfectly good, but without the device to read it, you're stuck. So I've since learned we really need to order two of these devices. And while it may seem a bit expensive at first, it really is a great backup to have in an office environment. And really, when you consider the price of a server, it's still cheaper than the server. And over the long run, the maintenance costs themselves will pay for itself within the first few months anyway.
Right, and I think when the device fails, the reason you can't get the data off is because it's a RAID device, correct? Because if it was a single hard drive, you would just be able to recover the hard drive.
Right, exactly. If it was a single hard drive, I could just pull the hard drive out and put it into a Linux-based computer to read the CIFS or NFS file system. But because it's a RAID device and it's specific to that RAID controller, we've got four hard drives. The hard drives have to be in that specific order, 1, 2, 3, and 4, have to be plugged into that same make and model of RAID controller, which I don't know what it is because it's built into the device itself. And by having the spare device, well, there's another way I could go around it. I could buy a spare device myself and then provide it to my clients on the rare occasion that they may need it. If all my clients had the same one, I could do that for them as a service. But it really makes sense for them to have it themselves so they're not counting on me. What if something happens to me? What if the relationship with me ends? And I'm all about data integrity and reliability and, of course, getting it on gigabit for the robustness. I still see that the data transfer is still going to be faster using a real, quote-unquote, real computer versus one of these NAS devices. But, and for most of my clients, that speed difference is not something they would notice anyway. I would in my own home.
Right. Yeah, and that's where I use it as well. I'm not in the same boat as you where I support clients for computing. And so my own need is simply a home-based need. And so I felt that, a dedicated box is what I'm trying to stammer and get out, is something that I would prefer over spending the time to build my own network depth storage. Out of components that I really don't have. The only real computers that I have are laptops, and they're not really conducive to making large storage devices out of.
Hey,
real quickly, do you are all of your computers Linux, or do you have any Mac or Windows computers?
The only Windows computer I have is my wife's netbook, and that's it.
Ah.
All of the rest are Linux.
Hey,
all right, go ahead, Craig.
All right, no. We're going to continue on. Larry, we have a suggestion of how you can get into the chat room. I'll email it to you during the break. Be right back. This is the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network and the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network, 866-606-TALK, the toll-free number, live at ComputerAmerica.com or the chat room at ComputerAmerica.com. It's all Linux this hour and the next, third Tuesday of every month. We do that. Larry Bushy is here with us. Hey, Larry, did you get that email with the suggested help from Jack Death in the chat room?
Yes, I did, and thanks, Jack. Unfortunately, I've already tried that, so I'm going to try something during the break between hour one and hour two, see if I can get it up and running. I think my problem is that I may have two conflicting versions of Java installed.
Oh.
So I'm going to uninstall them all, reinstall, and see if that helps.
Yeah, because we actually see you log in, and then we see you log out, but we don't see you typing anything. So
and I do try typing something, and it doesn't appear to display anything on the screen.
Now that happens. Now when you I don't know if in Windows if you have you update the current version of Java. I know on the Mac when I update the current version of Java, obviously it replaces it. It doesn't run both concurrently. So are you saying with Linux it runs them both concurrently, or that can happen, or what?
Well, it doesn't want to run them both concurrently, and now I'm in for the chat room.
I see it.
That's exactly what happened, yes. So I uninstalled the. They were both conflicting with one another, and now my browser just crashed. Wonderful.
And you just logged out.
I was in there for a moment. Okay. Well.
That's okay. Fort in the chat room has a little stopwatch. We're seeing how long what the fastest record of going in and out of the chat room is, and you're holding the record so far.
I think I made it.
This is what we do in the chat room here. All right, so now when we come back in the second hour, I know you have emails that people send to you over the weeks, and you have a bunch of them here, and we'll start going to them and reading them because a lot of people have questions, and we will certainly address those Linux questions that they have written to both you and Tom, who is your co-host on the Going Linux podcast. By the way, just so people will know, if people want to listen to the Going Linux podcast, how do they do that?
We can go to the Going Linux website at goinglinux.com.
Okay, it's that simple, right? And
you can go there, and there are links on the website on our show notes page to listen live. As live as you can get with pre-recorded material, but you can listen streaming. Through the links that are there, and you can subscribe in your Linux or Windows or Mac-based podcast receiving software, whether that's iTunes or something else. And if you do use iTunes, you can go to the iTunes Music Store and look for Going Linux there.
Now, there's a conundrum. You can get the Going Linux podcast on Apple's iTunes, but you can't get Apple's iTunes in Linux.
Yes. Well, thankfully, Mac hasn't blocked things related to Windows or Linux on iTunes. So
no.
They're nice folks there at Apple.
Yeah, of course. I'm hoping that one day they'll open because when they released the Windows version of iTunes to the world, it was in fact, and Apple said it was the first program Apple had ever written for Windows. Which was saying
and it
something.
Showed.
Well, there you go. Hopefully, it won't show that if they do it for Linux. Hey, we're going to break and then come back with the emails. It's our All Linux Show, both hours. Larry Bushy, the creator and host of the Going Linux podcast, continues on with us in hour two. We'll be right back after your local and national news for another full hour of the Computer America Show. Stay with us.
Broadcasting live, it's the only national radio talk show on computers to air every weeknight, Computer America, hosted by national columnist Craig Crossman. The first hour's behind us, but there's still more of tech news, tech talk, and your phone calls. We're being beamed nationwide by the Business Talk Radio Network, the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network, and on the internet at ComputerAmerica.com. You got computer problems? Bring them on. You're listening to Computer America. Computers run the world, and we run computers. Call us toll-free, 866-606-TALK. That's 866-606-TALK. Or send us an email to live@computeramerica.com.
Hello and welcome into hour two of the nation's longest-running, nationally syndicated radio talk show on computers. This is the Computer America Show, and I'm your host, Craig Crossman.
I'm your co-host, Kerry Holzman.
And we continue on our All Linux Show. Every third Tuesday of the month, we dedicate the entire show to the operating system, the Linux operating system. It's important. It's something that we certainly want to give attention to. Larry Bushy is our Linux correspondent who joins us. He is the creator and the host of the Going Linux podcast. Larry, welcome into hour two of the show. And
thanks.
Yeah, we have a caller who has a question for you. His name is John. Listen to us in San Diego on our radio affiliate KCEO AM 970, Computer America, Greg Crossman. Hi, John.
Hello. Good evening.
Good evening.
Hi, John.
Listen, hi. Larry, I was really looking forward to version 10.04 because it has long-term support. And I have a machine that has that I've installed 9.04 and 9.10 without too much problem. And actually, I've got a 3-boot on that. It's got the Ubuntu partition. It has the Wubi install or Wubi boot and Windows XP. But I was unable to install the Wubi Ubuntu 10.04 on this machine. And I'll tell you what happened. When I tried first doing an upgrade, It ran through, seemed to be doing fine. Then it stalled at, I think it had 15 minutes left. And so I let it run overnight and no improvement. So I abandoned that and I decided, well, I'll just try a clean Wubi install. And here's what happened when I tried that. Of course, with Windows, everything worked fine. Then you do a reboot and it gets to the finishing install point after you reboot, and the monitor goes off consistently. I rebooted, and the computer's still on, but the monitor goes off. So I was unsuccessful installing Wubi 10.04 on this machine, and at that point I wasn't going to try to do the partition.
Sure.
Any suggestions?
Well, let me ask you a question before I make any suggestions.
Sure.
That is, when you installed the second installation using Wubi, had you uninstalled the previous installation?
Well, the first time, yes, I did. When I did it from scratch, yes. When the upgrade failed, I did an uninstall. Then I installed it from the CD and did the reboot, and the monitor shut down.
Okay. Well, let me clarify one more time. So before you did the final install, did you go into the Windows add and remove programs and remove Linux from there?
Yes, I did.
Okay, good. Perfect. All right. Well, here's what may be going on, and it's very difficult to tell. First of all, the Wubi installer, which allows you to put the CD in, the Ubuntu CD in your drive and install it alongside of Windows, it doesn't actually make a second partition. What it does is it carves out a little space inside of Windows and makes Ubuntu think that it is running on its own hard drive, where, in fact, it's really running on part of the Windows hard drive. It's carved out a little bit of disk space there and made Ubuntu think that it's running on its own little partition. Now, it's recommended that you use the Wubi installation to try out Linux only, and then if you decide you want to actually use it, to install it in its own partition. The other thing that Ubuntu recommends, very strongly as a matter of fact, is that you do not try to upgrade Wubi installation of Ubuntu. It's not designed to do that. It is definitely designed only as a trial. And I suspect that what has happened is because you tried the upgrade, it has somehow corrupted that particular portion, although I would have thought that uninstalling it would have fixed it. There may be still some remnants of it hanging around there. So I recommend that the best thing to do at this point is to, if you've got the disk space, create a specific partition for your installation of Ubuntu 10.04 and install it in there.
Well, so you're saying have two Ubuntu partitions, the 9.10 that I have there, and then another Ubuntu 10.04, and then Windows XP?
Yes, you can do it, and then you'd have a triple boot computer, and you wouldn't have the issues that you might have with the Wubi installation being only designed as a temporary try it out sort of thing for Linux. And of course, that assumes that you have the disk space to spare, and if you already had a Wubi installation, your Windows installation, and another partition for 9.04 or 9.10, then I think you probably have enough disk space there.
I do have another quick question.
Sure, go ahead.
I was able to boot it off of the live CD, and that was the only way I was able to try it out. And I was disappointed that it didn't have a particular applet. I think it's called the hardware sensors or hardware monitor, which gives the temperatures for the CPU and I think the video card. And that was not available in the CD as I ran it. And presumably, you know, it's not in the repository for version 10.04. Is that right? Is that something they might have taken away?
No, not in my experience. You're talking about the applet that actually runs in the taskbar area in the In the bar at the top? The menu bar at the top?
Well, at the bottom, actually.
Well, either way, you can clearly usually install it either at the top or the bottom.
That's true.
Yeah, I haven't actually used that myself, that particular monitor for the temperature. Perhaps they have removed that. However, there are alternatives to that. One thing that I use for that kind of monitoring is something called Screenlets, which is available in the Ubuntu repository. And so what Screenlets allows you to do is to install a number of different system monitors, clocks, or weather applications, the kind of things that people like to have on their desktop. And you can put them on your desktop, and there are various varieties available for it. And they're all community-based sorts of things. And it's probably a wider variety of system monitors available there using that. And I, as I've been talking here, I opened up the applet to add to the panel, and indeed, I don't see anything here for monitoring the temperature of your system. You've got a CPU monitor, you've got a task manager equivalent monitor, the system monitor. But
I think it was called hardware.
The weather report. Yeah, I don't see the hardware test in here at all. So perhaps they've removed it.
Darn.
Goodness knows why. but you might want to try out Screenlets and see what you think there. There are plenty of different applications available with that.
Thank you.
All right. Listen, I want to, John, thanks for calling us, okay?
Sure. Okay, thank you.
And by the way, my apologies to our radio affiliate, KCEO. I incorrectly identified the frequency. It's AM 1000, radio station KCEO in San Diego. All right. Larry, I know we're going to go into some of the emails that you received, and certainly would like to start with those. So why don't we begin with Jeff, who of the Middle Georgia Linux Users Group?
Yep.
All right.
Yeah, the Middle Georgia Linux Users Group, MGLUG.
That was easy for you to say.
Yeah, exactly. And if you're interested and you're in the state of Georgia in the United States and you're interested in joining a Linux Users Group, that would be a good one to join.
Yeah.
They're available at mgalug.org on the internet, and you can go right there and sign up and interact with those folks there, and I'm sure they have regular meetings and so on. So Jeff wrote to us saying, "Howdy, Larry and Tom. Though I've been using and supporting Linux for over 10 years, I've been listening to your show since about episode 40. I found the show number 100 interesting, as I have Synaptix touchpads in all my Linux in all my laptops, all of which run some flavor of Ubuntu Linux. I'm sure you both know I was excited to think we would have awesome multi-touch features you talked about. I'm sure many other listeners did just what I did, immediately zipped over to their website to see. You know what? Well, the driver is currently only for OEMs, but from what Tara with Synaptix said, it won't be too long before we have something we can use. I look forward to that day. Best to you, Jeff."
Okay.
And that is hearkening back to our my last appearance on Computer America, where we did talk about hardware compatibility and the Synaptix touchpads and their press release that they had announced they would be officially supporting Linux and having some software and some drivers available for Linux computers, and that's what Jeff's writing about.
There you go. So hopefully he makes a valid point, and you will kind of agree with him.
Yeah, Synaptix, of course, is one of the manufacturers of the trackpads or touchpads or whatever you want to call those little pads on laptops and many other devices as well. There are some on things like BlackBerry phones. The Pearl that had the little roller ball, well, the latest versions of the BlackBerries have a little touchpad, and if I'm not mistaken, they're made by Synaptix or one of their competitors. And then one of the Harmony remote controls for your television and multimedia setups, those use a trackpad as well, a touchpad from Synaptix. So these folks are moving ahead with Linux support, and I think that we're going to see that from many, many more hardware vendors as time goes on.
All right, there you go. And the Harmony remote, that was the one from Logitech?
I'm sorry, say that again?
You said the Harmony remote is what you mentioned as well? Did you mention the Harmony?
Yes.
And that's the one that's from Logitech, correct?
Yes, it is.
Yes,
and,
okay.
One of their models, at least one of their models, has a synaptic touchpad on it that would be similar to what you might find on your laptop.
Yeah, there you go. And by the way, we're giving one of the Harmony Universal Remote as our grand prize in our contest.
Yes.
It's worth $250. So,
good price.
It is a nice remote control. I'll tell you what, we're going to take a break, and then we'll continue on with more of the. Yeah, this is the the Harmony One Advanced Universal Remote, and I'm looking to see that this one doesn't have the touchpad. This has a screen, and then it has a down, left, right. But yeah, some of them do have them. Hey, listen, we're going to break. As I said, we're going to continue on. It's our All Linux show. If you want to get on the action, toll free 866-606-TALK. Live at ComputerAmerica.com, or email address, or the chat room at ComputerAmerica.com. It's All Linux tonight. Larry Bushy, creator of host of the Going Linux podcast, continues on with us. We'll be right back after this. Twenty-four minutes after the hour here on the Computer America Show, 866-606-TALK, the toll-free number, live at ComputerAmerica.com or the chat room at ComputerAmerica.com. Larry Bushy is here with us. He's the creator and host of the Going Linux podcast, so we invite him here on the third Tuesday of the month because we dedicate the entire show to the topic of better phone lines. No, of Linux. And Larry is back with us now. Hey, Larry, are you there?
I am here, and between Java problems in the browser and telephone problems, I think we have all of that behind us and smooth sailing to
yes.
the show.
Now, that phone sounds really wonderful. I want you to get a label maker and put on that phone for use
this
on Computer America.
Computer America phone. Okay.
Okay.
Oh, man.
And we will continue on now with emails that you have received. What we do in the second hour now. I understand you have an email that came all the way from India.
Yes, there is this thing called the Internet, and
yes.
it makes these electronic messages go all the way around the world. So
yes.
Darman listens to the Going Linux podcast from India, or in India, rather, and has written us from India. And Darman says, "Hello, Larry and Tom. I listen to the Going Linux podcasts regularly and have found it very, very useful, as I also have the Unix as a subject in my final semester of bachelor's in computer engineering. I have kept on trying out the new distributions of Ubuntu since its 8.04 release, and that would have been back in April of 2008. I just wanted an application that can be used in Linux to sync my iPod with my music library, and also to automatically download podcasts just like iTunes does in Windows. Is or are such applications available for Linux? Regards, Darman." And Darman, we just mentioned that with Ubuntu 10.04, the version of Rhythmbox that has been built into or has been included with Ubuntu Linux for quite a number of years, now has the ability to interact with the Ubuntu music library on the Internet as part of Ubuntu One. And with all of that, it gives you all of the capabilities of iTunes, at least from an audio perspective, including subscribing to podcasts, listening to your music, setting up playlists, and subscribing to feeds just as you can in iTunes. So the only thing that Rhythmbox doesn't do is play the videos that iTunes is capable of doing, but there are other features of Linux that allow you to do that and to subscribe to video podcasts as well, subscribe and play. So I hope that meets your needs, and thanks for the email.
It's interesting that he's studying for a bachelor's in computer engineering, and they have he has Unix as a subject in his final semester, and they're
mm-hmm.
Unix rather than Linux, which I find surprising because I would think you know, computer engineering. Well, you know, I guess obviously both would be important.
Sure.
But I'm kind of curious as to why they focused on Unix, which is an aging, you know, operating system, as opposed to Linux, which is a more modern, more contemporary one. Any thoughts on that?
Well, maybe it's a back to basics sort of program that he's in.
Well, so is COBOL, but I wouldn't want to learn it anymore. You know.
Understand.
You know what I'm saying?
I don't know. Maybe I'm a little surprised that they left it to the final year as well to cover something as important as Unix.
It amazes me because I have to look back at my degree in computer science and I would say just about everything and anything that I learned back then when getting that degree is, for the most part today, is I mean, gave me a nice foundation, but is pretty much useless. I mean, I did study things like COBOL and Fortran and assembly programming. I just think that in a modern day computer science or engineering curriculum that they would focus on the things that are that are being used mostly. And if you're going to teach a Unix-like operating system, teach Linux, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Linux is certainly much more modern. Unix has been around since before Windows.
Bell Labs, yeah. I mean,
yeah,
exactly. And you know how long Bell Labs has been around.
Yeah.
All right. Well, anyway, thanks for the email from Dharman in India. And when we continue on, we'll continue with your emails too, Larry, regarding Unix. It's Linux. It's all Linux this hour. This is the Computer America Show. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network and the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network. It's a mate. We have someone in the chat room called Annoyance. That's his username. And evidently, he's saying, can you see me? And where everybody's saying, we can see you. But he evidently can't see us. And it reminds me of the movie. What is it? What they said, I see dead people. You know, where we can all see him. And he doesn't know that he can't see us, but we can see him. This is just, you know.
Very confusing.
But hopefully he'll be able to figure it out. Usually it's not this problem. He just logged out, so he doesn't know that we all saw him. What was it? What was the movie that I was talking about? I See Dead People. What was it? Carrie, you know what it is?
The Sixth
Sense. Thank you. The Sixth Sense. The Sixth Sense, right. Right, so it was a Sixth Sense experience for Annoyance. We could all see him, but he couldn't see us. You know,
right, well, and if Annoyance is listening, the way I solved that problem, if that is indeed the same problem I'm having, is that I uninstalled everything Java and then reinstalled the Sun Java in Linux and restarted my browser, and that fixed the problem for me.
There you go. Well,
took me a while, but I got there.
a fan in the chat room says, I see chat people. Okay, man. All right, let's go to the next email from David, okay?
Yes, and David asked a question about email. He said, hey, Larry and Tom, do you know of a good email program to use that will just let me view, write, and delete my emails, but will also leave them on my email website? In this case, Hotmail. I've used Thunderbird in the past, but Thunderbird took a lot of my emails off the Hotmail site and moved them onto my PC hard drive. I guess it's not that bad because if I just kept a backup of my Thunderbird folder on a thumb drive, then I guess I could take them with me. Anyways, I didn't know how to do a search for this kind of thing, so I'm hoping I've described my question well enough and I hope you have some good advice. Talk to you later, David. And yes, David, we do have some advice for you, and in fact, you don't have to give up Thunderbird at all. I suspect that you've overlooked a small setting in Thunderbird, and we'll include a link in the show notes to setting up Thunderbird under Linux. It's very, very easy to do, and it's very similar to setting it up under Windows. Thunderbird is one of those cross-platform mail programs that work in Linux, Mac, and Windows. And I think that
when you're setting it up, there's a section for server settings. And if you edit your account, if you already have an account set up on Thunderbird, or if you're setting up for the first time, it's one of the settings that you end up setting up. It's called server settings. And right in that area, after you get past setting up what the port numbers and all those other things are, it's going to ask you if you want to leave your mail on the server or whether or not you want to delete it from the server after downloading it. So right in around that area, in the server settings area, there's a checkbox that you check, and you want to make sure that it's checked correctly to leave the mail on the server, and that will solve your problem. There are plenty of other email clients out there. Many of them are provided with various distributions of Linux, and Ubuntu happens to provide something else other than Thunderbird, but Thunderbird is one of the more popular ones that various distributions provide, and it is something very easy to set up. So I think you just need to check that checkbox to leave the email on the server, and you'll be just fine.
All right, David, thanks for emailing Larry and Tom about that, and hopefully that answers your question. This is the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network and the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network. 866-606-TALK, the toll-free number. We're going to break just for 60 seconds, and we'll continue on with your Linux emails. Stay with us. 60 seconds.
And we're back with the Computer America Show, live on the Business and Lifestyle Talk Radio Networks. It's our all-Linux show tonight, right now, with, of course, joining us for both hours tonight, as he does each and every third Tuesday of the month, Larry Bushy, the host and founder of the Going Linux podcast. It's a free on-demand audio that you can download and listen to on your computer or burn it to a CD, listen to it in your car, put it on an MP3 player, take it with you wherever you go. It's all free and all very informative. And right now we're addressing some emails that Larry has received through the Going Linux podcast and taking the time now to read those emails and answer those questions.
Daniel in the
UK. Before we go on to the next email, just a comment from the chat room. We were talking just in the last email about Thunderbird, the mail client, and of the folks...
and not the drink.
Yeah, exactly. Jack Death in the chat room had mentioned that you should install Lightning, also not the drink, to go along with Thunderbird. And it's a plug-in for Thunderbird that allows you to do calendars and appointments and those kinds of things inside of Thunderbird. So it adds the calendar to Thunderbird, which is just a mail and contacts client otherwise. And Thunderbird is from the Mozilla folks, the same folks that provide the Firefox browser, and they provide the Lightning plugin. And if you prefer a separate application for your calendar, there's also something from Mozilla called Sunbird that takes the calendaring and moves it to a completely separate application outside of the mail client. So just some additional things that work cross-platform. So moving on to the email from Daniel in the UK. He commented on our discussions regarding printer compatibility with Linux. He wrote to Tom and me saying, "Hello, Larry and Tom. Here I am again. Yesterday I was listening to the Computer America Show, episode number 99. That's the Going Linux podcast, episode 99, where you talked about hardware manufacturers. Funny you mentioned Lexmark quite at the beginning. I remember, like a year ago, looking for a printer that didn't go for a Lexmark precisely because their Linux support wasn't all that great. However, one or two weeks ago, I read this article, and we'll have a link to the article, which is on the Phoronix website, phoronix.com, in which they say that actually Lexmark would be giving official support to their printers in Linux. They would even put the Tux logo on their boxes to show they support Linux. And in going to that particular article, it's 4 or 5 pages long and has a lot of screenshots of unboxing of this printer, and it illustrates the Tux logo right there on the printer box, and Lexmark apparently has become a very big public supporter of Linux.
Wow.
And advertising it right on their box. So, and, oh, on the second page it also mentions in the manual some setup instructions for Linux as well. So really good support for Linux, and I applaud Lexmark for that.
Well, you see, it shows you when you're I'm not necessarily calling Lexmark the underdog or not, but I'm just saying when you're competing with other printer manufacturers and you're looking for something that's going to make you stand out in the crowd, obviously support for more, the more support for more operating systems just makes you that much more popular, and it's, I think it's an excellent move on Lexmark to embrace the Linux operating system.
Well, sure, and for printer manufacturers out there who may be listening, there are as many Linux users as there are Mac users out there, so if you're making your printer compatible with Macintosh, you can double that amount of users by making it compatible with Linux as well.
There you go. All right.
Yeah. So thanks, Daniel, for that email.
In the UK. Daniel in the UK. Right,
yeah.
Exactly, yeah. We have a lot of the UK listeners here, too, and people call in. And Carrie just did a camera giveaway contest, right, with you and in the UK, correct?
That's right. I haven't really officially announced the winner yet.
Okay, well, there you go.
Aha, sneak preview.
We're going to do that soon.
Yeah. All right, so now we have Ken S. Is the next one, right? Ken, yes.
Yes, and Ken took issue with how I described Ubuntu regarding its regular releases on one of the Computer America shows I was on, where I was talking about Ubuntu before. He says, "Hello, Larry and Tom. Let me first say thanks for doing your show. Keep up the great work. Now to my issue. Larry, in episode 96, also known as Computer America number 24, you did something that I let slide in the past. You verbally hobbled the six-month releases of Ubuntu. This was done while you were trying to talk up the benefits of the long-term support releases of Ubuntu. What I mean by verbally hobbling is you said that every release between the long-term support releases are experimental and can or will have bugs like the issue experiences, bad spelling there, but like the issues experienced by the users trying to run a live CD with multiple monitors. When you say that a release is experimental, that might not paint the best picture for the work and effort the Ubuntu developers, QAs, document writers, designers, and all other content creators of Ubuntu have put into their release. It came off rather negative to me, and I would think it might put off a person from trying any version of Ubuntu unless it was a long-term support. So, if a person goes to the Ubuntu website today, they would be getting version 8.04, if they wanted a long-term support. Well, obviously this was before the release of 10.04, the current long-term support release. That means they are not getting the most current version of the software with 2 years of improvements. They could possibly run into other issues not having supported hardware if they have a computer that was purchased in the last year. Now, I am no Ubuntu fanboy, and I understand it can be hard to verbally paint a rosy picture on the spot on a live show. But I would like to hear you redescribe the in-between long-term support releases of Ubuntu differently. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but if you could remove a few of the words, that would be cool. overall, using the word experimental for a fully backed and released product isn't all that cool, and I guess that is my point. Thanks again to you and Tom for all the wonderful work you are doing. Best regards, Ken.
Except for that. Right?
Yeah. And Ken, point well taken. Experimental is probably too strong a word. It is Ubuntu, the Canonical folks release, as many Linux distributions do, releases between their official long-term support releases. And those do tend to contain programs that may be less well tested. I'm trying not to use the word experimental, but in other words, between those six-month releases in between long-term support releases, don't get the same level of thorough shakedown that is put into the long-term support releases. And that doesn't mean that they're unstable. That doesn't mean that they're not worthwhile. In fact, whenever there's a new version of Ubuntu in particular that comes out, I do install the latest version so that I can, well, partly because I want to review it, but secondly because I know that the releases from Ubuntu will be stable, they will be good. There may be some things that I don't like because they're experimenting with a new application that they haven't used before or they haven't installed by default with Ubuntu, but that doesn't necessarily mean that the application itself is experimental. It just means that they're trying something new and trying out a new standard, if you will. And this kind of gets back to a little bit of what we started our topic for the month, which is that the latest version of Ubuntu is much more like Mac than any other version. And one of the things that Ubuntu has done is they have tried to give the user a very nice, clean experience out of the box. And maybe after the break, we can expand on that a little bit.
All right. This is the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network and the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network. It's all Linux tonight. We'll finish up with Larry right after this. This is the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network and the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network. A lot of action and fun stuff going on in the Computer America chat room. I might even post some of the things in this from the log from this chat room. It's just hysterically funny. Larry Bushy here. I mean, it's like we have one guy in there wandering around making comments. He can't see that. He doesn't know for sure that everybody's seeing what he's typing, but he's making these little comments anyway, hoping that people are going to see it, but he has no confirmation that they're being seen. And it's just really kind of – you have to be there, I guess, to get the humor. Larry Bushy here with me and Carrie from on our Linux night. Do we have time to finish up your final thoughts on that, Larry?
Yeah, I think we could just cover off, rather than the last email, just talk about the fact that with the latest release of Ubuntu, that's 10.04, they've done a very good job of prepackaging it kind of the way the Mac does, with the basic applications an average user would need. And many, many applications out there beyond those, but Ubuntu does a very good job of providing one application for one thing. Not that you can't install more powerful applications, more advanced applications. They're all available in the repositories. But Ubuntu wants to make sure that the first-time Linux user has a very good experience right out of the box with applications that just work. And this particular release, the latest release, they've done a very, very good job of that.
Excellent.
So I have to commend them for that.
All right. You know, it just occurred to me when the show is over and we all leave, Annoyance might still be in the chat room all by himself making little comments, not knowing that everybody's already gone from the chat room. There's something in life that they do that where you pull a fast one and then he thinks that everybody is still there, but they're just talking to himself. I can't think of that.
That would be just mean.
That would be mean. Larry, if people want more information or to listen to the Going Linux podcast one more time, how do they get to listen to it?
Okay, the best place to go is the Computer America show notes, because we have links for everything there.
Yes.
Failing that, you can go to goinglinux.com, our website. Check out our show notes page. We have lots of information about each episode, as well as little players right there, so you can play each episode. Or you can subscribe to the podcast in your favorite podcatching software, whether that's Rhythmbox or iTunes or GPodder or whatever you use. They're all available, and we'd love to have new subscribers to the podcast and listeners to us here on Computer America.
All right. So, listen, thanks so much, Larry, again, for being here with us tonight.
My pleasure.
Carrie and I always appreciate you being here, and we will catch you on our next third Tuesday of the month in June, which will be the 15th of June. Thanks
okay.
for being us. Have a good evening. Good night.
Good night.
Tomorrow night, Carrie, it's going to be Wednesday Madness. Open phone lines, right? Anything you want to talk about? That's what we do on Wednesday Madness. And you know who's going to be with us in hour two, Carrie?
Who's that?
Dick DiBartolo, the Gizwiz.
Ah, the Gizwiz.
He's going to be with us in hour two. He's with us on the third Wednesday Madness of the month now on a regular basis. He is Mad Magazine's Maddest writer and has some of the wild and crazy things that he finds on the internet. We always have a blast with Dick here on the Computer America show. So that wraps it up, and we will see you tomorrow night. Don't forget the Seagate's going to be joining us on Thursday. And that was tentative, but now I know they're going to be here, so we'll see them then. So until tomorrow night, this is Craig Crossman hoping that your hard disk never becomes floppy. We'll see you tomorrow night.
Good night, everyone.
The opinions you hear on the Business Talk Radio Network are those of the hosts, callers, and guests, and not necessarily those of this station, Business Talk Radio Network, its management, or advertisers. The information on the Business Talk Radio Network does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. Investing involves risks. Please consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions or comments about the Business Talk Radio Network, contact us at 203-323-7300 or at our website, businesstalkradio.net.
Theme music provided by Mark Blasco at podcastthemes.com.